Listen up, football fans. You won't want to miss this.
Right now, new Bet365 customers bet $5 and get $150 in bonus bets, win or lose. So you could turn that $150 into something bigger when you bet on moneyline, spread, totals, player props.
$150 in bonus bets when new customers bet $5. I know where I'm going to bet from now on. Download the app today and see why it's never ordinary at Bet365. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. 21 plus only. Must be physically located in Ohio. T&Cs apply. In app only.
What's good, y'all? It's Von Miller, Super Bowl MVP, Sag Master, and now your host of Free Range. This is where NFL meets real talk. Every week, I'm bringing you inside the game, from locker room stories to league-wide headlines. You want football IQ, locker room insight, and real conversations with the people shaping the league? Welcome to Free Range with Von Miller, where nothing is off limits and every down counts. New episodes every Wednesday. Listen and follow Free Range with me, Von Miller, wherever you get your podcasts.
So enjoy the holiday.
It's time for the Chiefs Kingdom Show, live with the voice of the Chiefs, Mitch Holthus, and Chiefs head coach Andy Reid. It's presented by Bad Boy Mowers, proud partner of the Kansas City Chiefs. Chiefs Kingdom is bad boy country, mow with an attitude. And by Hy-Vee. The world's best tailgating begins at Hy-Vee. Proud official grocery sponsor of the Kansas City Chiefs. You're listening to exclusive coverage of Chiefs football.
Hey, this is Chiefs Radio Network sideline reporter and host of Fesco in the Morning, Josh Klingler. If you want to hear more from the voice of the Chiefs, Mitch Holthus, tune in with us every Friday morning at 7:30 and every Monday at 4 o'clock on The Drive. The Drive also exclusively talks to Patrick Mahomes each and every Monday at 3:10 on your official broadcast partner of the Chiefs, 610 Sports Radio. Now, let's get you into the Chiefs Kingdom Show, presented by the Kansas Lottery. Dream bigger.
Here is the voice of the Chiefs, Mitch Holthus.
A pleasant good evening to everyone. Welcome to the Chiefs Kingdom Show. I am Dan Israel for the voice of the Chiefs, Mitch Holthus. Big shout out to Mitch Holthus. He's following the COVID protocols, but he is here in spirit. I know it. Tonight, we come to you live from the Hy-Vee Market Grill in Shawnee, Kansas. If you're in the Kansas City area, you want to join us, 63rd and Flum, Hy-Vee, Shawnee, Kansas. We have a very special guest tonight, former All-Pro offensive tackle and Super Bowl champion, Mitchell Schwartz. We're going to talk with Mitchell about last night's game. We'll also talk to him about the contest coming up this week in Kansas City. We'll find out what he's been up to these days. This just in, Packers 27, Chiefs 19. It is never easy to win in the National Football League. It is never easy to win on the road, so a tough one to accept last night in Green Bay as the Chiefs fall to 8-4 on the season. We're not going to blame officiating, though. We're not going to blame the conditions at Lambeau. We're going to accept that we control our own destiny, and we're going to go better, and we're going to look forward to the challenge of hosting Josh Allen and the Buffalo Bills next week. That's what our locker room does, right? That's what our locker room does, and that's what we're going to do as fans. One quick note from last night's game. Man, congratulations to Harrison Butker. He took matters into his own feet, kicking himself to a 23rd consecutive make, tying his own previous record. Butker is the fifth kicker in NFL history with 12 straight games to start a season without a missed field goal. Butker has just been money all season, so definitely deserves a spotlight on him. Also, shout out, I know the end of the game didn't go so well for him, but shout out to the toughness of Isaiah Pacheco. Man, when I saw that, that's right, when I saw that footage of him getting rolled up on that ankle, I thought for sure it was going to be a high ankle sprain, he was going to be out for weeks, but Pacheco shakes it off. He would have come back in the next play if the rules allowed that. I love that kid. So shout out to Isaiah Pacheco yesterday in that contest as well. We want to remind you about the Hy-Vee score. No, we don't want any more penalties. No penalties there. We want to remind you about the Hy-Vee score and save discount. Just shop Hy-Vee the day after the game. You earn a full fuel saver discount equal to the Chiefs score and based on the amount you spend. The Chiefs scored 19 points last night, so tonight you save 19 cents a gallon with any $19 purchase. The more we score, the more you save. When we come back, we'll be joined by All-Pro tackle, former Kansas City Chief Mitchell Schwartz. Lots to talk about with him. That is next on the Kansas City Chiefs Radio Network. Sure what to do. Welcome back to the Chiefs Kingdom Show. If you're in Kansas City, you want to join us. We are at the Hy-Vee Market Grill in Shawnee. I'm Dan Israel, in for the voice of the Chiefs, Mitch Holtis, who is quarantined at home for another few days. Mitch, I think I speak for all of us when we say, get back soon. It's not the same without you, my friend. Yeah. Also appreciate Ari Wolf yesterday on the call for Mitch. Ari flew in from, I think, the West Coast at the last minute. He got there about 10 minutes before we went on the air. And let's just say it was a fun night. Ari did a good job filling in, but man, is it different with a different guy in your saddle. So, Mitch, can't wait till you get back. Tonight, another Iron Man Mitch, just like our own. He played 7,894 consecutive snaps. Dude, that is a lot. He was one of the men responsible for keeping Patrick Mahomes upright in Super Bowl 54. Give a Chiefs Kingdom welcome to number 71 in your playbook, number one in your hearts, former All-Pro tackle Mitchell Schwartz.
Thank you. Good to be here.
Nothing like dragging you out on a night when we may not have had our best performance, but I want to start with that. You know, tell me your thoughts on the loss yesterday.
Frustrating, I would say. I think we're all a little bit frustrated, and we've gotten used to a certain way that the team performs, a certain way the offense performs especially. And I think at this point, we almost have to recalibrate the way things are. I think we keep hoping that things will change and the offense will get cleaned up a little bit. I think it's late enough into the year. We're into December now. This is kind of the team that we have, and yeah, there will be some games that look a little better. There will be some games where we have some improvement, but hoping that things get tightened up and we're going to hit this home stretch and everything's going to look like it used to, I don't think that's the reality for what this team is this year. I think we have to accept a little bit of that, but the flip side is our defense is the best it's been in the last, you know, 6 or 7 years, so as one thing fades, the other thing gets stronger, and I think if you look at the team as a collective, it's probably the strongest team top down. You mentioned Harrison, you know, before we cut to break, he hasn't missed a kick all year. The special teams for the most part has been pretty good. So I think the team as a whole, we're just so quarterback and offense focused that it's frustrating when it doesn't look as clean as it used to.
Yeah, and in your day, I mean, you know, just a few years ago was your day, but that team, those teams, man, they could score, they could come back from anything. You know, I mean, 3 touchdowns in 8 minutes, piece of cake, and it's tough when you get off to a slow start and you don't have that ability. You're not going to score 30 points. You're not going to score 35 points. You need a good defense. While the defense struggled yesterday with the Packers, certainly, they've played great all year, but is the ability for the offense, you mentioned it's kind of solid at this point. I mean, we're not going to see a lot of change there. How do they balance this thing out to be able to take it through the playoffs? It's very difficult once we get, you know, the end of December, January, and February are unbelievably tough.
So, to me, the thing that we've kind of realized the most is that this offense doesn't have a margin for error anymore. You know, things that are typically drive killers are penalties, sacks, anything that makes you go backwards. Historically, Pat has converted like every 3rd and 15+.
Yeah.
And so we're just not, again, that offense anymore. So in the past, we used to be able to get a holding call, we could get a false start, we could have a guy run a wrong route, we could throw that interception that we're not sure if it's the quarterback or the receiver or whatever else. And it was like, okay, well, we got these other 9 possessions and we're going to score 6 touchdowns on those and it'll be okay. But the way teams have started defending us over the past few years, with everyone knows about the 2 high looks and kind of forcing us, you know, Pat's, I think, in the bottom 3 of the league in terms of average depth of target. You know, we're throwing the ball very shallow because teams are taking away stuff deep, and also we don't really have the guys who are getting open deep as well. And so this is a drastically different offense that is more 12-play drives, 15-play drives. Now, the last 2 years, we were that team as well, but we were awesome at it. We were the best in the NFL, and you look at kind of the underlying numbers, and that offense was different than we were used to. It wasn't the chunk plays. It wasn't, you know, Tyreek on an 80-yard bomb. But those offenses were statistically the best in the NFL. This year, we're having to be that kind of offense that has these longer drives. And I mean, the first half of yesterday was the perfect example. We had 2 drives in the first half, which is unprecedented. I mean, literally 2 drives, great long drives. You get to the red zone, but you have to convert those opportunities, especially when the opponent is converting those opportunities. And so that's where the margin of error becomes that slim. You know, we get to the red zone, we have, you know, a cover sack on 1 first down, a real sack on 3rd down, got to kick the field goal. Next time we got a sack, got to kick the field goal. So we're just not a team that's equipped at this point to make up for mistakes. And to me, moving forward, just trying to make the ordinary as ordinary as possible and don't try to do anything extraordinary, and also do what you're supposed to do in that ordinary role.
Did you like the direct snap when they moved, does that kind of stuff as a lineman? Because that's where it's won and lost, right, on you guys. Can we just be normal, or do you like the fun trick stuff?
So it's fun, but for us particularly, those things usually happen with a different cadence, or we have to do something a little bit different at the line because the quarterback either isn't there, he's somewhere else, or it's someone else who's kind of giving the timing mechanism for the play. And especially when you're on the road, you're probably using a silent cadence, and those plays tend to happen in, you know, the third and one, or the short yardage, the goal line situations where the crowd is loud anyway.
Yeah, right.
So it's a lot of fun. It does take like a little bit more mental focus to know, like, hey, this one, it's going to be a little bit different snap count, or some timing thing is going to be a little different than we're used to. It's not going to be past normal cadence. It's not going to be the normal flow and rhythm. But there's nothing like making those plays work, scoring on those plays. I mean, in the Super Bowl, that Rose Bowl shuffle, like, yeah, we've practiced that since May of that year.
Was it that long?
Yeah.
I knew you had it in your pocket.
Yeah, they broke it out in OTAs originally, and we kind of kept it in there for the entire year. And so it's fun when those things finally happen. You know, it's pretty rare to just kind of create a play and use it that particular week. Even if you do create a play for a particular week against a certain team and a look, that situation doesn't always arise. So those fun plays are fun. We do enjoy them. But if you're going to do it, you got to convert.
You got to make it happen, right? You mentioned time of possession. I mean, the problem with time of possession is it affects the whole team. The defense gets exhausted when you don't hold on to the football.
Yeah, and it's the type of thing, I think, offensively, that you don't necessarily chase time of possession. I think we were all, you know, the first three quarters, happy to see the way the run game performed, the way Pacheco looked, as you mentioned. I couldn't believe he came back in the game either.
Yeah.
I do think the fourth quarter, people talking about, oh, he only got one carry, that was more circumstance. You know, he got one carry, he was only for 2 yards. Now it's second and eight, we throw the ball incomplete. Now it's third and eight, throw the ball incomplete, you got a punt. I think that's normal. Next drive, throw the ball on first down, get 9 yards. We get a penalty to get us to first down, and then we throw a pick. And the next time we get the ball, we have to go score to win the game. So in terms of the flow of the game, the one carry in the fourth quarter, that's just the kind of natural flow. I don't think there's anything wrong with that, per se, based on how those things develop. But it is nice to have an offense that can hold on to the ball to help the defense, you know, as good as our guys are. I mean, imagine if you give Chris a little extra rest and the other defense lineman a little extra rest, or McDuffie and Snead, who are chasing all these guys around, just that little bit extra rest. You're able to really recover, and the defense appreciates that as well. And
absolutely,
so it's fun to do something that everybody appreciates.
Our guest tonight is Mitchell Schwartz, former Chiefs right tackle. Yesterday, I got to learn to work with a live audience. Normally, I'm just talking from the booth. There's nobody there but an empty field. Hey, I want to ask you. It seemed like yesterday, we just don't work from under center. And I felt like Patrick Mahomes was under center a lot yesterday, wasn't he?
He was, more than we're used to, and I think it was pretty effective. I think you'll probably see more of that in the future. It looks like our run game performs really well from under center, that it unlocks some things in the play action game. Now, it's different, though, if you're used to being in a shotgun. Even in play action, you're not really turning your back to the defense. And as good as Pat is, play action from under center and fully turning your back on the defense isn't something that he does as much. And so it does take a little bit of time and comfortability to completely turn your back on the defense, as good as he is at seeing things that, you know, we don't think his eyes should
be able to pick up. I think he's got eyes in the back of his head anyway.
I know. And so that's the best ability, to be able to run that under center play action and actually be able to see while you're not looking. But I do think it's kind of the identity we've realized is going to be what we need for the offense. It also gets two tight ends in the game. I think Pat has a lot of comfortability, obviously, with Travis, but also with either Blake or Noah. Those guys are playing good ball, and they can do some interchangeable things there as well. So you're looking at, you know, personnel-wise, getting better guys on the field, or guys who are producing a little bit more, getting matchups most likely in the run game, because teams treat Travis as a receiver more than they do a tight end. And so if you are running the ball, you have two tight ends on the field. Now you're looking at, you know, not that base defense with three linebackers. You're looking at a sub defense with two linebackers. And theoretically, that's an advantage for an offense who's trying to run the ball. And I think we're equally as effective throwing the ball, because, you know, Blake's less of a receiving threat than Noah. And, you know, Noah can still do some really good things in the game, pass game, that we see from Travis. And I would imagine that's something that we lean on more into the season, especially as it gets, you know, it's kind of a cliche to say the colder weather and the run game month right. and everything, but I do think there is a little bit of validity to it. And as you mentioned, time of possession wise, you know, grinding these games out. And if you know your margin of error isn't quite as good on offense, you know, that's a way to kind of shorten that as well.
You know, in your teams, they were is very much passed to run the football. And of course, Mahomes, with the talent that he has, you want the ball in his hands. But is that a little bit of a shift with the receiving core that we have now? Is that a little bit of a shift where we need to get back maybe to run to pass the football? Or is that an oversimplification?
No, I think there's a little bit of a shift to it. And I think the thing that people don't get to realize if you're not in those meetings is Coach Reed loves challenging us as offensive linemen. He loves giving us the ball. And we have to earn that respect that he should call more runs. I think if you look at modern, quote-unquote, modern football, but he's really done it over the past 20 years, throwing the ball on early downs, throwing the ball, 60 to 65% in those neutral situations has shown to be the most effective way to score points. And so you throw the ball early to score points. If you look at, your average run is 4.5, 5 yards. Your average pass is 6, 6.5 yards. It's a pretty easy calculation to do there. And so the best run game in the NFL is still, quote-unquote, less efficient than the worst passing game. Well, there's a couple teams that might be throwing that off this year. But for the most part, throwing the ball is a valid strategy on early downs. And you do try to get that lead. And then you rely on the run game in the second half to bleed out the clock, to punish the defense, to keep them off guard. I do think they are maybe switching a little bit more. And this offensive line, I think they've also had to figure out what they're best at. We know what the interior three are best at, but you don't necessarily know how that meshes with two new offensive tackles, what they're comfortable with, what they are good at with their guards, the double teams that they're better at, the specific angles. And so those are the things that you learn over the course of the year. And I don't think it's a surprise that, you come out of a bye and you come out of a few extra days and all of a sudden the offense starts to look a little bit different because the staff reassesses things every few weeks, and especially when you've got extra time, they're going to lean into, hey, we're doing these things really well and this is what we want, our team to look like into the future.
Assess for me the two tackles, because we all know the result of the 2020 Super Bowl when you and Eric went down, and it made a huge difference. There's no question about it. I've never seen Mahomes run so much in his life. But Wanya Morris gets thrown in there last night. It's not difficult to be an offensive line for a guy like Patrick Mahomes, is it?
No, Pat makes your job very easy. He gets rid of the ball pretty quick. If there's pressure, he doesn't take a sack. If you look at all the numbers in terms of pressures that turn into sacks, Pat is always the best in the NFL at not letting pressures become sacks. Either the ball's gone or he's making a guy miss. For me as the right tackle, if I get beat around the corner, he just kind of dips underneath and that escapes to his throwing side anyway. And so life is better with him as the quarterback. And, for Wanya, I thought he looked pretty good. That quote-unquote sack that was given up around the corner, that's not on him at all. As offensive tackles, ideally you can get your guy to about 10 or 11 yards. The cutoff is typically about 10 yards. He had his defensive end to 11 yards, which is more than enough depth. And then you also look at field position, you're at the 5-yard line. You're typically told as an offensive tackle to take firmer, flatter sets because the defense, they can't really speed rush up the field. The whole field gets compressed. The defensive line is more likely to bull rush and work power moves. So you as an offensive lineman, it's a little bit even more okay to think about getting your hands on the guy and keeping the width of the pocket as opposed to the depth of it. And there's a little bit of pressure from the right side that Pat felt. He rolled out of the pocket and defensive end, got him from behind. But that's not on the left tackle on that play. I thought that was a really good ref from him. So, yeah, I think he played pretty well. We didn't hear his name the rest of the game, which is a hallmark
good thing.
of a relatively good offensive line game for the most part. So, yeah, I think encouraging for sure. And for the first kind of real game action to get thrown in there, you don't know you're going to be playing that role. You don't know you're going to have to go up against those guys. And, the Packers have a couple pretty good pass rushers. Yeah. So he definitely showed some promise.
I love talking to offensive linemen because you guys are so smart. I mean, the detail, the level of detail, the level of preparation, I've just always found it fascinating. There's not an inch that you move that isn't by design, and you guys are just, you understand the game at a level. I don't want to denigrate any of the other players, but it is fascinating the football IQ that exists on the offensive line.
Yeah, it's different, especially for I mean, the guys we're going against these days, you know, you look at Chris Jones, 6'5", 310, 315. The whole rep on him coming out was that, oh, he plays too high. And he plays, it's like, well, he plays high because he's strong.
Yeah, and he's
because
huge.
He can.
Yeah.
And so you're playing against these guys who are just physical marvels. You know, Chris goes and he has just as much success rushing over offensive tackles as he does rushing inside, which is, again, pretty unprecedented for a guy of his size. So you have to kind of reckon with these guys who are physical freaks, and that's the biggest difference, I think, in football over the past 10 or 15 years. There's been a lot of talk of offensive line play slipping, and or is the CBA at fault? Is, you know,
no,
the spread
low,
offense,
no
or
and
is this at fault? And yeah, maybe a little bit, but I think the biggest thing is defensive line is just a lot more skilled than you used to have. You know, you used to have these space eaters. It used to be about stopping the run. You used to be, you know, inside 350, 360 pounders, and guards would just lick their chops if there was a pass play because it was bull rush or nothing. And now you've got Aaron Donald, who's 285, and he's kind of created the mold for what the smaller, quicker defensive lineman looks like. You got, you know, you look at our pass rush on third down, we got 40 ends on the field. You know, you kick Dan inside, you kick Chris Jones outside, you bring in Charles, you bring in George, you got a bunch of fast guys out there. Yeah. And so we just have to deal with better athletes, better skill than we've ever had before. And so that's where our craft becomes a lot more important, because there's only so few of us that can out-athlete guys. And at some point, the athleticism dies and need to rely on technique anyway. So, yeah, there's a lot of intricacy that goes into what we do.
I'm amazed at the NFL, man. You got size and you got speed. But when you put size and speed together, it just isn't fair. They're freaks of nature. You guys are just unbelievable. We're going to take a break. More with Super Bowl champion Mitchell Swartz. When we come back, you're listening to exclusive coverage of Chiefs football.
Now, back to Mitch Holtis and the Kingdom Show, presented by Bad Boy Mowers.
All right, first and goal. They hand it off to Pacheco. He's in for six. Touchdown, Chiefs. Flags all over the place. I don't think the Packers were ready because Mahomes went quickly. There you go. Touchdown, Chiefs. First of the night. The Packer lead is now 14-12.
I love that quick hitter, man. They caught us off guard. We were up in the booth, and I don't know what we were doing, but we weren't ready for it either. Welcome back to the Hy-Vee Market Grill, 63rd Street in Shawnee. I'm Dan Israel, sitting in for the voice of the Chiefs, Mitch Holtis. With me, one of the previous anchors of the Chiefs' offensive line for a half decade, former Chiefs, Mitchell Swartz. How many times did you play up in Lambeau? Is it? I mean, when you walk, I remember when I was a kid, early in this, maybe the early 90s, you walk out on Lambeau and you realize that every bust in Canton, Ohio, played on this field. It's just got a magic to it.
It does. And you know about Lambeau. You know the history. You know Lombardi and the Packers and all that stuff. And you get on the bus. So you stay in Appleton. You don't stay in Green Bay, because I think there's legitimately one hotel in Green Bay.
Right.
And the Packers stay there. So you have to stay in Appleton, Wisconsin, which is, I don't know, 45 minutes or an hour away. It's a cool little hotel. I mean, it's in a tiny little city.
It has not changed one bit.
No. But it's a fun experience, and you get on that bus, and you drive for about 45 minutes or an hour, and you probably fall asleep a little bit, or you're so nervous you're wound up, and you're just driving through a residential area, and all of a sudden a stadium
Boom.
Pops out of the blue, and it's literally in the middle of a residential area. It just looks like a normal neighborhood, and you hear all the stories of, yeah, you know, Packers fan just let me park in their yard, and I got to use the bathroom, and I made a new friend. And, you know, the rep of the fans is they're the nicest fans in the NFL. You know, they don't really give you too much crap as visitors. They welcome you, and they wish you well, and obviously they hope they win, but it's a little bit different than maybe going to Oakland used to be.
Very, very.
And so getting to then go into that stadium, and now with the renovations too, I think it's a little different, but it's very tight. Like, the stadium is very cylindrical and tall, and so you feel like everything's on top of you.
Yeah, they're really close. There's not much sideline room.
No, and the fans feel tight, and you see all of the names and all the great, you know, names throughout NFL history that you've grown accustomed to, and it's just a very cool and special place, and it's a lot of fun to play there, and got some good memories from it.
Yeah, yesterday the snow was falling. It looked like a snow globe in there. It was crazy. Does that fade? I mean, does that pretty much hit you at warm-ups? Once the game gets going, it all fades?
Yeah, I mean, typically it'll get you the first time you kind of come out of the tunnel, and whether that's, you know, pre-game if you do your own thing, whether that's, you know, the actual warm-up when you go out to the field. Typically when they announce you as a team, you know, running out Lambeau Field and then the stadium's full for the first time that you're seeing, you're getting booed, you hear all the fans, you see, you know, yesterday a lot of red in the stadium, yeah. So you get to see your fans there as well. That's when it kind of hits, and then at that point it just flips into game mode.
What was your favorite place to play?
Lambeau's definitely up there because of the history of it. I mean, Seattle was a lot of fun because of how crazy that got in terms of the loud, the noise, and how good they were. And we had that one good game up there. Can't remember if we won or not. Might have lost that one, but it was a lot of fun to play there. Now it's, I mean, I was in Cleveland before, so going to these stadiums was less cool because the stadium itself was awesome, but the environment wasn't because we were Cleveland coming to town, and it wasn't necessarily the marquee game for the fans. So going as a Kansas City Chief and being the best team in the NFL, you get the fans' best effort as well, and so that makes the experience more fun. But no, I think, you know, Denver's a lot of fun, especially once you kind of get here and you get into the rivalry of it. There's a few stadiums, but I mean, no stadium has the history, and no franchise really has the history quite like Green Bay.
How about the worst?
Used to be Oakland. That was a pretty obvious worst.
I have to agree with that. Not just because of the fans either. I mean, it's just the amenities of that stadium. It was not built to do a modern NFL venue.
No, it was terrible. I mean, they were like two toilets. The equipment staff didn't even have their own room. So
they did it in a hallway.
They set up in a hallway. You know, the biggest thing for me is kind of space. And especially after a game when you're hot and sweaty and everyone's trying to change and bags are on the floor because you're trying to pack for the airplane, both your clothes and your equipment, and it gets steamy and stuffy. If there's not the requisite space, I mean, you don't stop sweating.
Yeah, right.
As a large individual who's over 300 pounds, that's a bad proposition when you're trying to put some nice clothes back on and get on the plane. So space and bathrooms are really like the two key amenities that I look for. And Oakland's was awful. The old Charger Stadium, that was a cool place to play, especially growing up in Los Angeles and kind of having more of a tie to Southern California area. But in terms of amenities, and I used to joke that those look like horse stalls because you just –
They did.
I mean, typical locker, you know, doesn't have too much width coming out towards you. It just has the locker up against the wall. There, it legitimately had, like, horse stalls, like little separators or dividers that would come out. And you just feel, like, trapped inside of it. I mean, for us big guys, it's just, like, no shoulder space. I remember Mitch Morse used to get a little bit anxious before games, shall we say.
claustrophobic.
He was just, like, sitting in the little horse stall and not feeling very good. But you kind of have those memories, and you remember those things. So, yeah, there's it's gotten better as the modern stadiums. But honestly, the new L.A. stadium, the home or the visiting locker room is not that great. It's two smaller locker rooms with a divider, and the shape of it is almost like an H, and so it's very broken up. It's very segmented.
It is weird.
At halftime, when you're, you know, the offense has to meet together, the defense has to meet together, there's not like a great space to do it because there's no communal space, you know, quite like this. It's not like a rectangle or an oval. It's very broken up. And so even as they build these new stadiums, the first time I went to New York in the new stadium, I thought, this is going to be awesome. You know, we're playing the Giants, so we're going to get the Jets home locker room. This is going to be sweet. You don't get the Jets home locker room. They have two home locker rooms.
You get a third locker room.
And they have a visiting locker room. Yep. And so you're in this tiny locker room. And I was like, oh, this is terrible. I thought we were going to get the other home locker room. Because the best stadium is the Rose Bowl. And now I'm biased because.
Really?
Yeah. I mean, my parents went to UCLA, so I grew up going to UCLA games. So that was part of it. And, you know, growing up in L.A., and that's, you know, the granddaddy of them all and all that stuff. But in terms of amenities, they built it to be able to host the Rose Bowl and Super Bowls and events like that. And so that visiting locker room as a college player is probably still the nicest locker room I've ever been in. It's a giant rectangle. The lockers are enormous. They've got plenty of room for everybody. It's just really well done. So I can't imagine what the home locker room looks like. And then, you know, again, for me, it's the Rose Bowl. So you're playing on that surface in that stadium, you know, growing up Keith Jackson doing the announcing and all that. So that, to me, is probably the single most fun place because it has the most memories and it has the most, you know, kind of emotional tie. But in terms of the NFL, I think it's Lambeau because of all those reasons.
It pains me to say it, but Allegiant Field is a really nice stadium. I mean, compared to what we endured for all those years in Oakland, it's like going from rags to riches.
Well, they had to make up for it because that was pretty pitiful. That was the one I didn't get to my last year. by the time we traveled to Vegas, I was injured and I wasn't able to make that trip. So I haven't been to that stadium or played in it, which is unfortunate because I was looking forward to it. Because it is fun to play in different stadiums and to, you know, have that kind of mental picture of what the locker room's like and what the layout's like and how far they make you walk in the hallways from the buses. Some of them like to, you know, kind of spin you around the whole stadium.
I always love in Denver, you come out of the visiting locker room and there's a big sign there that says, "Welcome to Mile High Stadium, 5,280 feet elevation. Altitude sickness is a real thing." Like, as if you guys are going to fall privy to that mental cue there.
I mean, it's smart to have it there, let's be honest. You know, you never quite know what guys are going to feel the first time they play there. Playing in Denver, and Coach does a really good job. You know, obviously every year you got new guys and guys who aren't quite as used to playing in it, but you do lose your breath a little bit quicker than normal, but you also get it back quick. And, you know, I think when you're playing there, just kind of sticking to it and trusting that you're going to get your wind. You know, there's no advantage that Denver has because they play there. So it is like a fun environment. It is kind of cool. But there are guys who, the first quarter or so, it takes a little bit of adjustment to get used to, and they start to freak out a little bit. And I think maybe a couple extra oxygen canisters on the side because guys are pretty quickly calling for the oxygen.
Yeah, it is a real thing. We got them back, though, because if you come out of the Chiefs visiting locker room now, it says, "Welcome to Arrowhead Stadium, home of the world champions, the loudest stadium in the National Football League." So I want to check in with what you're doing now. We're going to take a break. More with Mitchell Swartz when we come back. This is the Kansas City Chiefs Radio Network.
Yeah. Now back to Mitch Holtis and the Kingdom Show, presented by Bad Boy Mowers.
Chiefs 5-for-7 on third down, third and goal from the 2, from the left hash mark. Three receivers to the left of Mahomes in the shotgun. Mahomes with the football, goes to the end zone, caught! Touchdown, Chiefs! Noah Gray with the touchdown grab. And the Green Bay lead is now 21-18.
Ari Wolf sitting in for Mitch Holtis yesterday. Noah Gray touchdown, you know that. You saw a big 93 number get a touchdown. It was one of those days in the NFL. Mitch is going to be back next week. I'm Dan Israel sitting in for Mitch. Meanwhile, the other Mitch is here, former Chiefs All-Pro tackle Mitchell Swartz. How fun is it when you see, like, when you hear the tackle eligible? Does it just make you? Does it make the hair on the back of your neck like, I want to do that?
No, not at all. It depends on the play. If it's, like, going to be an open pass or whatever, then that's okay. But I always got nervous about, like, getting the ball and then having all these guys that are professionals at tackling people try to tackle me who's never attempted to not get tackled in my life. And I don't think with big guys, they're hitting us up high, so they're going to, you know, go for the lower body. So my thing with the streak, so if you report as eligible and the play gets run and you don't score, you're not – you have to then still be eligible. And so, you know, for my purposes at the time, like a streak, you couldn't really risk that per se, because if the play was run and I wasn't open or whoever else wasn't open, the next play I would have to come out for a play to then go back in as an ineligible lineman.
I never thought about that.
And so that actually, I mean, not that guys have streaks, but you do think about things like that. And then it also messes up what you do on field goal or the point after attempt, because if, you know, I'm supposed to be an ineligible guy on the PAT, and it's a third down play, and we're running the special play where I have to report as eligible. I get to try to catch a pass. That play doesn't work. We now kick the field goal. Well, I then have to be eligible. So now I have to switch with the tight end on that play, who's an offensive lineman, but tight end in terms of where you are in the formation. And now that guy has to go play my spot. So you have to, like, think about these things, and you have to know every single week if we have plays where there's a sixth offensive lineman or a guy who becomes eligible. What happens if we now have to kick the field goal? If you score the touchdown, that basically counts as like a dead ball. And so you are able to go be your typical ineligible offensive lineman the next play. Those are kind of all the permutations you run through every week of a game.
Did I tell you? Football IQ, right? That's what I'm talking about. Do you miss anything about the game? I'm sure you missed the locker room, because I hear that from every ex-player. I miss the camaraderie of the locker room.
Yeah, that's just something you can't really replace. And, you know, you could get into coaching, you could get into doing some other stuff, you could train, you could do other things, but you can't replace being in a locker room every single day, building those relationships, the shared experience, especially, I mean, it sounds a little bit, I don't know if elitist is the word, but like the five offensive linemen that are on the field together during the game, even your relationship is a little different than, you know, the few other guys who aren't out there as much. You know, you have inside jokes, you have little stories. Hey, remember a couple years ago when this guy did this? Like,
yeah.
The guy you weren't next to on the field isn't going to remember that. And so there's just a special bond that you kind of form with the guy next to you, the guy in the field, the quarterback that you're blocking for, all those shared experiences. And then recounting those or having fun and all those things you don't get to replicate. So that's something we all miss. It's something you have to try to, you know, fill the gap in your life. But in terms of the physicality or the mental stress or, you know, any of the other kind of on the field things, I don't miss those. I'm pretty happy and content these days. I tell everyone retire as quickly as you can in life.
Well, you can still walk, right? Do you ever think about getting back in at a coaching or?
Not at a coaching level. They, for the most part, tell you don't coach if you, unless you're crazy or if you make enough money, don't come back and coach. Because, you know, our schedules, I don't know how many hours a week we work. It's, I don't know, some people will underrate it, some will overrate it. But however long we work, say it's 50 or 60 hours, the coaches have to be there before us, after us, and have all the preparation ready for us for that chunk of time. So they work miserable hours that looks like no fun. They don't sleep. They, you know, eat terribly. They, all these other things. It's just not a very great lifestyle, and that's not a lifestyle I want. So if I do stuff, it'll be more in a consulting type of thing or helping individual guys here and there. But in terms of full-time coaching or doing anything that mimics an NFL schedule, let alone what a coach has to do, that's off the table.
I always said, you know, with coaching, I've never seen a coach's office who doesn't have, like, you know, a bathroom and a shower in a closet and someplace to sleep. So that ought to tell you.
I know, it's true. My college coach, we were building a new stadium. He was a stay overnight guy, and so he got, you know, a little suite built next to his office where he could actually have a bed and not, you know, a pull out couch or a blow up mattress. You know, some coaches will go home every single night, even if it's only for 2 hours. They need that break of, all right, I'm leaving the office, I'm going home,
new day,
I'm gonna do something different, I'm gonna decompress in the car, whatever it is. They need to do that. Other guys, they just want to get every moment
facility.
Of sleep. And so there's a lot of working harder, not smarter, I think, in the NFL, and a lot of these coaches could probably do with a couple more hours of sleep every night and just kind of trusting that the preparation is going to take care of itself. And, you know, that extra hour of grinding film when you're exhausted, you're probably not going to pick up on the things you need to pick up on anyway.
No kidding. You've been spending a lot of time traveling.
We have, yeah. It slowed down a bit the last few months. We've had some, you know, pet health issues and other things that are keeping us in town for a little bit, but we had a wedding in Italy in June, and we parlayed that into a much longer trip in Italy, and so that was a ton of fun. But we do like to travel. We do like to get out a little bit, especially during football season. I kind of like to be around and be able to watch the games. But, we enjoy that, and it's nice to see other places. And it's, I mean, honestly, to me, going to Europe, it's really incredible to see history and to see things that were built, you know, hundreds and thousands of years ago. It gives you a new perspective. I mean, we're crazy young as a country. You don't necessarily conceptualize it until you go see these old buildings, until you see
buildings that were built in the 10th century.
And ruins and things when there was simpler times, and you wonder, like, how did they get water back then? How do they do all these things without electricity, without this, without that? So it's a lot of fun. You learn a lot about, you know, different people, different cultures, and I think it you know, helps to bring everybody together.
You love cooking, man. I can only imagine Italy was unbelievable.
Italy was. That was a lot of fun. The dough is just so much different. Bread, pizza, whatever.
How
you
so?
Get. It's a lot softer and
really?
More pillowy. You know, everything's so natural there. I think that's kind of the biggest thing. I mean, with at a place like Hy-Vee especially, you know, staring at a Health Market sign over there.
Right, they farm table everywhere.
But, I mean, other countries, less processed foods, more natural things. I mean, a dough is flour and yeast and salt and water, and that's it. And you top it with tomatoes and cheese, and that's it. And, you know, you farm the animals there in the countryside, and it's kind of that old school mentality. And things are just simply done, but they're exceptionally well done. And so, yeah, anything, you know, bread, pizza, pasta related, I was all over. The tomatoes are fantastic. The cheese is awesome. I don't know that I had a bad meal there. And, you know, when you're traveling, if you're depending on what kind of excursion you're going on, Italy's like a beach place. You know, you're walking around a bunch. You're trying to get in as much movement as you can.
Yeah, how much of Italy did you do?
So we did a lot. We went to Tuscany. We went to Milan, which is where kind of all the wedding people started. And the actual wedding was in Como, so we went there for a few days. And then we went down to the Amalfi Coast, went to Capri, went to Rome. So we wanted a mixture of, you know, kind of oceanside stuff a little bit with the Amalfi Coast. We wanted to get the history of Rome and a little bit of Naples. Obviously, the wedding was in Como, and Lake Como is beautiful and a little bit more relaxing. Tuscany, kind of countryside, wine country. And so,
does the food vary greatly through those regions, or is it all kind of Italian?
It's all kind of Italian. They all have their, you know, specialties. They all have the way they do certain things. You know, if you go to Rome, you're going to get, you know, the Roman four pasta dishes, which are pretty classic. And then if you go up to somewhere else and you ask for, you know, this particular pasta, if you ask for cacio e pepe or whatever, that might not be a local dish. And so that city just won't make it. Or if a place does make it, it's not, you know, quote unquote authentic, because that's not what the style. Because in Rome, you have these animals and you have these plants. And so all the dishes are based around those specific things. And each city kind of has its regional specialties. And so you try to find the hole-in-the-wall places that make those.
I take it you're more, just from the sound of that, you're more of a kind of a cook than a baker. Do you like both?
No, I do a lot more cooking than baking. I would love baking if I didn't have to make 15 of everything. You know, I don't have
you
the ability.
You can't do small, yeah.
I don't have the ability to say no if, you know, a beautiful piece of bread or a pastry is sitting on the counter. So, yeah, I probably should bake more and then just, you know, find some friends to give it to.
What was your favorite part of Italy?
Ooh, that's a good one. Como is beautiful. I mean, it's just an awesome place, and it's serene, and, you know, you're kind of there on the lake, and there are little pockets of cities that you can go to. Capri was pretty amazing as well. It's a little island, and, you know, we were there for a couple of nights, and that one's more, you know, you're kind of, at least our hotel was up at the top of it, and so you're a little bit more secluded and a little bit more, I don't know if it's a local feel, but that's the cool thing with Italy, is there's really no wrong place to go. Every place is going to have something for everyone, and you know, we'll probably go back. You know, we try to go to different places as much as we can, but that was a trip that we liked a couple of the cities a lot. We want to go back, and then when you're there, you talk to people, and they recommend you need to go here. If you like this, you should go there. Yeah. And so you pick up a list that's almost longer than the one you went with.
It's another trip altogether. You and I did 2015. We did London. Then 2019, I think, was Mexico City. These international games, man. But Coach Reed takes you in and out so quick that
I wish you got to experience. I know. I wish you got to. And I wasn't here for the London one, but even that, if you go there a few days early, you know, I just can't imagine, like, walking around the city to explore, you know, for the week in Miami for the Super Bowl. There was a little bit, the mall was right across the street, so, you know, you walk to the mall and, like, walk around a little bit just to break up the time, but you're also there for a full week. But if you're in, you know, these foreign countries, and, you know, the Mexico City game we flew in the night before, we treated that like a, you know, game in the States. I think this year for Germany, they flew in on Thursday.
Yeah, we went out Thursday night, ended up Friday morning.
Yeah, so you don't really have the time, and then, you know, you take a red eye and you wake up and you practice, and then you're probably going to want to lay down and get some rest and kind of get acclimated to the time zone. So it's great from the fan perspective, obviously bringing in all the fans in different countries, but you, even in the States, people always ask, like, oh, what's your favorite city to go visit? I'm like, I don't know. I don't have one. I didn't, you know, we get 3 hours at most to go explore, and I'm a nervous guy. I never like to leave the hotel. I was too nervous, probably because I grew up in L.A., about traffic getting back, and I didn't want to miss any meetings, and especially the meetings the night before games, so I just stayed in the hotel.
In Mexico City, they lined the sidewalks with armed guards. It was crazy. Talk about altitude sickness. That was a high one. 25 more days. You have 25 more days to win big with your Hy-Vee Fuel Saver Plus Perks card from now through December 31st. When you swipe your Hy-Vee Fuel Saver and Perks card, you'll be entered to win a trip for two to the big game in February. 5 days, 4 nights experience for two with hotel accommodations and tickets included, courtesy of Hy-Vee and the Kansas City Chiefs. No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited. See your local Hy-Vee store for complete details. We'll have final thoughts with Mitchell Schwartz when we come back. You're listening to exclusive coverage of Chiefs football.
Now back to Mitch Holtis and the Kingdom Show, presented by Bad Boy Mowers.
Love in the shotgun. Packers with a two-point lead. Play clock winding down. It's in two. They just get it off. Love looking left, looking middle of the field. He is going to get sacked. The Chiefs come up with the sack, get the stop, and they will force a field goal attempt. Mike Dana brings down Jordan Love.
Mike Dana and that offensive line, or that defensive line, having a good year too. Mike Dana, Chris Jones, George Karloftis. George has been, he's at 8 sacks. He's just quietly sneaking up on everybody.
Mike's got like 6.5.
Yeah, I know. It's been a good, it's certainly been fun to watch defensive football. Welcome back to the Chiefs Kingdom Show. I'm Dan Israel in for Mitch Holtis. Mitchell Schwartz is our guest tonight. Mitchell, I want to talk to you about the challenge of facing the Buffalo Bills. It's something you know well. It's never an easy task. The AFC is a competitive division or conference.
It is, and you know this kind of became our second rival in the Mahomes era. I think it was the Ravens and Lamar for the first couple of years, and it was Buffalo for the next year and a half, 2 years, then Cincinnati. Now Buffalo might be taking that one back, and so there's a little bit of, like I said, kind of that built-in rivalry that even though we're quote-unquote struggling, Buffalo is struggling a lot more than we are right now. So it's kind of an inflection point for both teams that I feel pretty comfortable we're going to win the division and make the playoffs and all that. Buffalo 6-6. Obviously, Miami's playing really well. They're probably not going to win theirs, but this is a huge game for them to kind of solidify themselves as a contender this year and be able to make the playoffs. And so them coming in into town and it's going to be a fun one to watch because it's going to be two teams that are doing some searching and wanting to make sure they're playing their best ball, and especially against each other. And obviously, when those two quarterbacks get in the same building, usually we have a fun one.
He knows football, so I'm going to trust you on this one, Mitchell. Mitchell Schwartz, always enjoy catching up with you. Good luck, man. Stay safe, stay healthy, and keep enjoying your travels. And thanks for coming out tonight.
Yeah, thanks for having me. This is always a lot of fun. And wishing the real Mitch all the best in his recovery. Hope to see him back here soon.
He is a Super Bowl champion. He is an all-pro tackle. He is Mitchell Schwartz. On to week 14, hosting the Buffalo Bills. The Chiefs historically play well in December, so expect the red and gold to bounce back here against Allen and the Bills on Sunday. Next week, Mitch Holtis returns to the Hy-Vee Market Grill in Olathe at 119th and Ridgeview. If you're here in KC, plan to be here for that. Until then, my thanks to everybody tonight for a special guest, former Chiefs Mitchell Schwartz, also to our engineer here at the Market Grill, the award-winning Shotgun Jackson. Yeah! On the board back in our Odyssey Studios, Nick Price. Always appreciate Nick. Can't do it without him. On-site promotions, Cameron Smith. And, of course, our engineers, Ken Wolf and Dustin Hilton. And really thanks to all the folks at Odyssey, the Kansas City Chiefs, for their help in making the Chiefs Radio Network the greatest in the National Football League. For the voice of the Chiefs, Mitch Holtis, I'm Dan Israel. Thanks for listening, and go Chiefs!
You've been listening to the Chiefs Kingdom Show, presented by Bad Boy Mowers. Bad Boy Mowers, proud partner of the Kansas City Chiefs. Chiefs Kingdom is bad boy country. Mow with an attitude. And by Hy-Vee. The world's best tailgating begins at Hy-Vee. Proud official grocery sponsor of the Kansas City Chiefs. You're listening to exclusive coverage of Chiefs football.
You've been listening to the Chiefs Kingdom Show every Monday night starting at 6 from your local area Hy-Vee store. Presented by the Kansas Lottery. Dream bigger. For continuing Chiefs coverage, stay tuned to 610 Sports Radio throughout the week to hear exclusively from Patrick Mahomes, Andy Reid, Derek Johnson, Mitch Holtis, and Danon Hughes. And if you miss a show, check out the podcast page at 610sports.com on your official broadcast partner of the Chiefs, 610 Sports Radio.
This is the Kansas City Chiefs Radio Network.
Bet365 is paying out before the final whistle.
Check out Bet365's unrivaled early payout offer. When you bet on a team to win and they take a 17-point lead, you get paid no matter the final score. Forget the final whistle and start counting that cash. Hold up. You get early payout on parlays, too.
Download the app and see why it's never ordinary at Bet365. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. 21 plus only. Must be physically located in Ohio. T&Cs apply.
What's good, y'all? It's Von Miller, Super Bowl MVP, SAG Master, and now your host of Free Range. This is where NFL meets real talk. Every week, I'm bringing you inside the game, from locker room stories to league-wide headlines. You want football IQ, locker room insight, and real conversations with the people shaping the league? Welcome to Free Range with Von Miller, where nothing is off limits and every down counts. New episodes every Wednesday. Listen and follow Free Range with me, Von Miller, wherever you get your podcasts.